Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
It is Tuesday, the 24th day of May. Good morning. I'm Michelle Martin. Asia-Pacific markets are trading in the red this morning as investors set aside overnight gains on Wall Street. Seoul down 0.4%. Tokyo is off 0.3%. Sydney trending lower as well. So what is driving investors today? Joining me now as we try to answer the question and to break down all the market action. Good morning, Ryan Huang.
Morning, Michelle.
Let's start this morning with a somewhat unusual item, the price of chicken here in Singapore, or more accurately, the direction that chicken prices are likely to head. Chicken is a staple in my diet. Are you a fan?
I'm a big fan. In fact, I just had KFC yesterday, so I'm just bracing for what's to come.
Oh, gosh. Well, starting next month, chicken prices may receive a jolt as Malaysia halts chicken exports. Why is that?
Right, so it's pretty reflective of what we've been seeing playing out across many countries. Exporters holding on to their supplies. In recent weeks, we've seen how Indonesia had the supplies of palm oil being restricted. And now Malaysia is talking about, at least planning to suspend exports of chicken to Singapore. And this could be a big deal because Singapore takes about a third of its chicken supplies from Malaysia. So this is something to, I guess, digest, to think about implications. And like you rightly pointed out, it could mean higher prices. But at the same time, we'll have to see how this plays out in terms of supplies from elsewhere. So this is something to see as well, how long the export suspension will last. And Malaysia does want to stabilize its prices. You know, the cost of pretty much everything's been going up. So it's doing its part to make sure its own citizens have enough to do and enough at a right price.
Now, here at home, Singapore sources one-third of its chicken supply from our neighbours to the north. With Malaysia unexpectedly halting chicken sales from next week, do you think we could make up for that shortfall from other countries?
I think the short answer is simply yes, but there are so many uncertainties. So you have a few questions around whether consumers will be willing to switch to other, I guess, chicken sources. Like if they see that a chicken came from elsewhere, would they still buy it? Like if it came from Europe, would they still be willing? And also one thing to note is that the chicken that comes from Malaysia, they come as live chickens and then are slaughtered and chilled in Singapore. If you go to alternative supplies, like from Europe, you typically see them being frozen, and then they will arrive in Singapore as frozen birds. So you do have a bit of a different taste, according to some people, if it's frozen rather than chilled. So that's one question. Are consumers willing to, you know, switch choices? And maybe this could be incentive for them to move to alternative proteins or even more greens. So you've got a lot of things that could play out, or different ways it could play out. And also one thing worth to watch out for is a bit of a story that's being detailed in the Straits Times, how some of the restaurants typically have a certain size of chicken they work with. And these are typically bigger sized chickens that come from Malaysia. So now that Malaysia is out of the equation, they may have to turn to alternative smaller sizes that come from maybe Europe or other places. And this could just mean a change in recipe, and some of their workers may not be trained with those type of sizes. So there is a lot of, I guess, challenges for the F&B industry also, because they are used to working with certain ingredients. So that could be a bit of complication for them as well.
Yeah, I hope my favorite chicken rice sellers don't go out of business because of the changes in the equations they have to make with the cooking oil and the cooking time, because the size of the birds change, and because you're not using chilled anymore, you're using frozen, as you say.
Maybe it could turn out better. Maybe, I hope so.
Ever the optimist, Ryan Huang. I'm going out and having some chicken rice after this. Now, if chicken prices do go up as a result of Malaysia's export ban, it would contribute to an overall climate of rising prices. Singapore's core inflation rate, in fact, is rising at its fastest rate in more than a decade. Now, fill us in. What does the latest data show?
Yeah, latest data for April shows core inflation rising to 3.3%, and that is the fastest in more than 10 years. But I guess it's not a surprise if you've been following the headlines. Things have been going up. Inflation numbers have been also ticking up. And this time around, driven by higher energy and food costs, the familiar suspects. So that, of course, like you alluded to, if chicken prices and things like everything else continue to go up, it just could mean, you know, the cost of living just a bit higher than before.
Let's segue now to take a look at U.S. markets. Wall Street finished higher overnight following seven straight weeks of losses. The Dow Jones Industrial Average finished up 2%. The S&P 500 was up nearly as much. And the tech-heavy Nasdaq climbed 1.6%. So what was behind this rally? And is it mainly a case of bargain hunters finally stepping into the markets, or is something else going on?
I think it's a mix of a few things. Maybe bargain hunting. We did see markets under pressure for quite some time, and maybe it was time for them to rebound. And we did see them jump. If you look at the S&P 500, up from nearly teetering into bear market territory, they eventually closed higher. The Dow was up as well, and this up by 600 points, nearly 2%. The S&P 500, 1.9% higher, and the Nasdaq rising 1.6%. So really bouncing back. But the question is, how sustainable it is going to be in terms of momentum. And one of the factors also driving the sentiment is Joe Biden, US President Joe Biden, talking about those tariffs that were slapped on China by Donald Trump. So he is now talking about reducing those tariffs, and that will help towards bringing down the cost of living, because these tariffs are being paid by US businesses and then passed on to consumers. So if you take out that layer of cost, it could help with the inflation story in the US. So that seemed to help markets bounce back overnight.
All right. I think financial commentator Stephen Innes, who we both interviewed on many occasions, sums up the market's mood pretty well. The S&P 500 is currently trading a bit shy of the 4,000 mark, and Innes writes that the choice is binary. If the US and the global economy avoid recession, he sees the S&P 500 rallying about 12% to the 4,500 level. But if the Fed does not engineer that soft ending landing they've been talking about, and rising interest rates do lead to a recession, then Innes thinks that the S&P 500 will fall another 25%, all the way down to 3,000. Growth data, he says, will carry the baton, meaning we should all keep a close eye on those GDP numbers. So what do you think of Innes's argument?
Yeah, he does have a valid point, because we've been talking about the same problems for a long time. The Ukraine war, rising costs of living, what's happening with China with the slowdown. So to some extent, that has been pretty priced in into the market. So you have investors trying to figure out, is there anything else to shake things up and really move things with conviction in a certain direction? And he thinks if we do get a recession or not, that could be the, I guess, game changer, or what could just tip things over. So, of course, we've seen some signals of that happening. You pointed out the soft or hard landing equation. Now, if we do get a hard landing, of course, things will just plummet. And of course, you have the technicals at play as well. If you look at the bear market situation for the S&P 500, if they do go into a bear market, going by historical averages, that will mean they could stay there for a long time. And that could just mean selling begets selling, and people just making it a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that is something to play out as well on the technical front. But by and large, it does have some valid points going by his arguments.
As U.S. President Joe Biden continues his tour through Asia, there are two big items of note. One is a possible gaffe by the U.S. leader with respect to Taiwan and China. And the other is a new major economic grouping that is directed against Beijing, but is also shying away from tariff issues. So first, let's start with a possible gaffe. At a press conference in Tokyo, Biden was asked if the U.S. would intervene militarily to defend Taiwan in the event of an attack from China. Now, Biden replied, yes, it's a commitment we made. The problem with this, though, is U.S. policy has been one of, quote, strategic ambiguity, as well as support for the one China policy. So I imagine Beijing did not take lightly to the U.S. president's remarks, did they?
Yeah, I have to say Joe Biden is being consistent. So it's not the first time he has come up with a slip-up around Taiwan. At least he's done many other slip-ups as well, also against Vladimir Putin, just hinting that he might take him out of the equation. So he is, you know, being consistent in that sense. Okay, here, talking about Taiwan, the slip-up is around how, he says, the U.S. may act if they have an event where there is a Chinese attack. And people are reading into it as how the US might step in with the army, the air force, you know, military forces physically. But then you had the White House just walking back those comments to say he's only promising aid in the same sense of how they sent aid to Ukraine. Chinese authorities, of course, have not been happy. They have again denounced those comments, saying the US should refrain from sending a wrong message about Taiwan. And that, of course, will really cause grave damage to bilateral relations. So another bit of deja vu, because he's done this before.
Now, when Biden said yes to the reporter's question about defending Taiwan, though, do you think this was intentional as a way to test Beijing, or was it a real gaffe?
There is an argument for that being an intentional accident of sorts, right? Because he, in a way, can find some unity by having a common enemy, right? By just making someone a bad guy, by just testing the waters, just provoking a response from China that could just paint China in a bad light. That could work towards the US's advantage in that sense. So that could be something, I guess, to think about if that could be the case in terms of being a strategic mistake in that sense. This is going to be something to watch out for, to see if he will continue to make the same mistake again. He has once again done this before, and I wonder why he keeps doing this.
He's Ryan Huang. I'm Michelle Martin. 9:16 on the clock. Now, the other big story I want to raise that's arisen out of Biden's trip to Asia is the launch of a new economic grouping called IPEF, or the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity. 12 nations are members, including Singapore, Japan, India, Australia, and several other countries in the region. China is notably left out. Now, Ryan, the other thing left out, which typically a feature of any grouping like this is an attempt to lower tariffs. So why has that been left out? And what will this economic bloc actually do if it's not focused on lowering tariffs?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? Why join the party if the party has no benefits for you? Okay, let's start with the tariff question first. So it's being framed as a framework, not in the same type of sense as a traditional free trade deal. And one issue with just eyeing out a free trade deal is that it takes time, especially with consensus within the US policymakers. The Democrats versus Republicans will once again play out and possibly drag out for a long time. But with a framework, it can expedite the agreement process. And I think this is why they are pushing this framework first, as maybe a bit of a stepping stone towards something larger. And then the question of why there are no tariffs, why do people still want to join this? It is something to work on. We don't have the full details and the full scope of what the benefits will be, but we have the broad pillars of what they will act on. And this is also worth noting that the agreement covers, or at least the framework covers, around 11 countries, 7 of them in ASEAN, including Singapore, and 4 in the Quad right now, the US, Australia, India, and Japan. So they will be observing or participating in this agreement, and they make up 40% of the world economy. So anything that they agree to could pave the way for a larger deal and also affect other trade members. So here's the four pillars, and they involve trade, supply chains, clean energy, and fairness. So the focus here is on raising standards rather than dropping tariffs. So raising standards means things like observing higher ESG regulations, making sure there are no human rights violations, that sort of thing. Also, making sure there's an early warning system and a way to diversify supply chains, just making every member country more resilient. And looking at clean energy, which means tackling climate change, looking at areas of cooperation for renewable energy, carbon removal, in the energy efficiency standards, once again, standards. Also looking at how they can tackle tax, anti-money laundering, and anti-bribery regimes. So once again, looking at how they can raise the game for their own economies by observing regulations.
A little bit of skepticism about the ambiguity of what this new framework is going to do, especially since many of the countries that have signed up for Biden's framework already belong to a bloc with China that was set up 5 months earlier, China's led Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which links 15 Asia-Pac economies and is the world's largest trading bloc. Now, one possible item of good news for markets is that Biden is floating the idea of cutting tariffs on Chinese goods. One more China-related story, this one driven by Beijing, not Washington this time. China is planning to roll out a massive tax relief plan worth more than $20 billion to boost its economy. Who's likely to benefit, and do you expect China's shares will rally on the news?
That could be something to watch out for when Chinese markets open, and we are looking out for tax reliefs to the tune of 140 billion yuan or $21 billion. And this will help businesses, you know, just pay less taxes. And also it will help with the passenger car purchase taxes. And we are also looking at policies to stabilize the economy that will help supply chains function better, ensure domestic cargo transport runs smoothly, and also increase the number of domestic flights. So all in, you are looking at quite a broad range of sectors helping. And looking at the property market, that is a big contributor to the Chinese economy. This is looking at policies that will allow cities more leeway and flexibility to set their own support measures. So they will launch a series of infrastructure projects in areas such as water, the renovation of old housing, energy security, underground piping. So those sort of broad ideas are there, plus giving the scope for local governments to do what's needed in a more targeted fashion.
Time now for more corporate news and a game of up or down. We're going to stick with the China theme this morning. And our first item is Tencent billionaire co-founder Pony Ma.
All right, I am going down because he is stirring up a lot of questions by reposting an article on his social media platform questioning the state of the Chinese economy, particularly how the tech companies are being treated, how workers are being treated, and of course, these sort of things can be quite sensitive.
Down for me as well, Tencent co-founder Pony Ma has spoken up online, sort of, against China's strict COVID zero policy. He shared a viral opinion piece about the policy's economic consequences. Now, Ma usually aims to stay out of the spotlight, but it looks like he's clearly frustrated with the economic climate. I can't imagine that these remarks are going to help Tencent, though. So while this might be an up for Ma, I'd say it's a down for Tencent, actually. So let's turn now to Chinese electric vehicle maker XPeng.
All right, XPeng, I would go with down because even though it met revenue projections of $1.2 billion, net loss widens as the supply chain disruptions continue to eat into its margins. So down for XPeng.
Definitely a down. XPeng losing $260 million in the first quarter of the year. That's much more than analysts were expecting. Its share price in the US closed down 5.5% overnight. Airbnb.
I would go with up, even though it is shutting its China business to focus on outbound Asia travel. I'm going up because China only accounted for 1% of its revenue. I'm going up because it helps to make Airbnb cut its distractions and all the complexities of working in China. So that could help it focus elsewhere.
Okay, that's interesting. Airbnb says it's shutting down its China business and will only focus on outbound Chinese tourism. That's the official line. But we should also note that Chinese tourists aren't traveling outside China at all right now because of the country's COVID policy. So what exactly is Airbnb focusing on when they talk about outbound Chinese tourism? It's going to be a down for me for Airbnb. MCT and MNACT.
The meeting between shareholders and the companies or the REITs have decided that they will merge. So both sides have voted in favor of the merger to create one of Asia's top 10 REITs. And if you look at the resolutions at the MCT EGM that happened yesterday, some 91.7% of MCT unit holders voted to approve the merger. So that really shows how much support the merger proposal had. And this will now make it one of the top three REITs listed in Singapore behind CapitaLand, Integrated Commercial Trust, and Ascendas REIT.
But is bigger always better, Ryan?
In most cases, they would say so. So
a number of local investors have been opposed to this merger, as MCT was the only Singapore-listed REIT that was focused solely on the local market. So I'm going to give this a down. Yangtze Chang Financial.
I am looking at up because they are talking about a share buyback mandate, putting it up for voting so that they will get the directors the leeway they need to buy back shares when they actually need to. So it gives them the flexibility to undertake share buybacks at the appropriate time. So this will be at an EGM to be hosted on June the 8th.
Yangtze Chang Financial seeking approval from its shareholders to launch that share buyback plan. Now, this could be good for its share price, so I'm going to give this an up. News that inflation in Singapore is running at its highest level in a decade contributed to a bout of selling on the Singapore Exchange yesterday. The Straits Times Index fell 0.8% to 32.13. The agribusiness Wilmer International led the market lower. Ryan, how is the STI trading this morning?
Ooh, let's take a look at how we are doing so far. Across Asia, it's been quite subdued with all the mix of headlines, and we are now in the green, just barely by 0.1%, so slightly recovering from yesterday's drop of 0.8%. So looking at the top movers right now on the STI, it's pretty much split across the middle. At the top, Yangzijang Shipbuilding up 1.1%, followed by DBS, Singtel and Sembcorp Industries. And we have the bottom movers in the form of ComfortDelGro down 1.4% and Mapletree Industrial Trust down 0.8%, followed by ST Engineering, Ascendas REIT and Mapletree Logistics Trust. So that's the picture we have right now for Singapore markets.
Thank you very much. He's Ryan Huang. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.